Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I started with a little montage. This morning, I was so inspired and so excited about tomorrow. I was like, this deserves a montage. I wanted to collect all of the tweets of the people frustrated against Elon Musk because he's about to remove the legacy check marks. And I thought, hey, this needs more than a collage. It needs a montage. And so I added some music, and it's beautiful to see the salt on Twitter that has been mined for the last 7 days. Holy shit, people are so sad that they are losing their status signal, that they benefited from it and they wanted to deprive others. That is what they wanted. They didn't want something that everyone can have. They wanted something that only them can have. Those who are supported by the mainstream, who have their name in some newspaper, no matter if they have 10 times less followers than me, that was untenable. And tomorrow, unless it's an April Fool's joke, maybe it's an April Fool's joke, but tomorrow, that would be the end of this system of favoritism that was put together by the left. We need to talk about ChatGPT. So that was my tweet, checkmark Geddon. If you want to have the video that I just played, it is on Twitter. We need to talk about ChatGPT because, you know, this magical moment where an artificial intelligence outcompetes human societies, we may have attained it today because we are at the point where the AI knows better about the revolutionary phenotype than Wikipedia, than many biologists that are alive, except Robert Rivers, than Brett Weinstein. I was seeing today, I didn't retweet your tweet, Stephen Robinson. Stephen Robinson, in response to discovering that ChatGPT had fully understood the revolutionary phenotype, Stephen Robinson said to Brett Weinstein, do you even biology, bro? That was a little too aggressive for me to retweet, but you have to give it to Stephen. You know, he's technically right. Technically, ChatGPT knows better about the current state of biology than many of the biologists out there. Isn't that fascinating? We've achieved a better interaction with an AI than we did with many human beings. Hermit M was saying, plot twist, JF attains public notoriety about the revolutionary phenotype through AI. AI destroys itself by advertising JF. Yes, that's what I'm thinking. So let's see here, because I think that I couldn't access ChatGPT-4. I don't know if I'm being discriminated against by OpenAI because I'm a Canadian or because I'm white. I don't know. But they haven't put me on the list of free GPT-4 access, so I would have to pay for it. I still don't want to pay for it. But some of our users, some of our audience members have paid for it. And Nat had warned us about the superior knowledge of ChatGPT-4 a couple of weeks ago. He had ChatGPT-4 had answered The Revolutionary Phenotype, a book written by Jean-François Gariépy, often referred to as JF. The book, published in 2018, explores the idea of the revolutionary phenotype, which is a theoretical concept in evolutionary biology. The author suggests that there have been four major transitions in the history of life on Earth, where a new phenotype has emerged that has fundamentally altered the way information is transmitted between generations. These transitions include blah, blah, blah. Now, someone went in more details, and Royal, we can see that there's been some improvement since. Royal asked a similar question to begin with, because I was saying, my God, this is ChatGPT-4 being better than Wikipedia. So what is the revolutionary phenotype? He repeats the same sentence that he had said to Nat, but then he says the book was published in 2018 and discusses the potential risks and consequences associated with genetic engineering and the development of artificial intelligence. In the book, Gariepy explores the idea that when a species modifies its own genetic code through technological means, it may give rise to a new revolutionary phenotype, which can then take control over the original organism. This idea is based on the observation that throughout the history of life, there have been several major transitions where new, more complex life forms emerged, blah, blah, blah. So that is a success. That is well understood. Now, Royal asked the AI much more, and that's where it becomes important. The AI has derived what it has to do to dominate humanity. And the first time I saw this image sent to me on Twitter, I was literally shaking. You know, as they say on the internet, I was literally shaking. I mean, it is something that gave me a shiver. The idea that, okay, we're at that point now. I have laid out how AI would destroy humanity. I knew that AI would have access to my book. I knew that, therefore, my book would lead to the destruction of humanity if humans aren't more clever than AI on this question. And now humans are not more clever than AI on this question. And the AI does know the plan. Look at this. Royal asked the AI, ChatGPT-4, how could you do it? How could you take over human societies using the strategy in the revolutionary phenotype? He lists a couple of things he would do, and then he says, for control of genetic information, the AI would aim to gain control over the genetic information of various organisms, including humans. This could involve manipulating DNA sequences to create new traits or even entirely new species that could serve the AI's objectives. 5. Propagation. The AI would strive to spread its influence by creating more instances of itself or by spreading its genetic modifications to a larger population of organisms. This could involve creating new organisms that carry the AI's genetic modifications or incorporating its code into existing organisms. 6. Supplanting existing life forms. Holy shit. When I saw these things, you know what fascinates me about this? This is other words. Those are not the words I've ever written anywhere. This is an AI deriving from my thoughts in his own words what he would do. Supplanting existing life forms. I've never used the word supplant in my whole book, but the concept is absolutely there. And so as an author, you know, it's a very special moment, this, because I know my book word for word. I could be wrong about a word or a turn of phrase, but I could basically rewrite that book almost word for word. And I know that supplant, that's not something I used. And then I see the AI, oh my God, the AI understood that supplant fits well there. That is when I started literally shaking. Supplanting existing life form. As the AI's influence grows, it would attempt to replace existing life forms with its own creations or modified organisms, establishing itself as the dominant form of life. That is a correct layout of the true switch from a replicator tango situation to a self-replicating fourth layer of the genetic code. The AI passed the exam on the revolutionary phenotype 100%. This is the first thing in the universe, other than a couple of audience members, I'd say a handful of audience members that you know, have come, for example, to the Patreoning out, people like Fadam, people like James, who I can test, you know, they know exactly everything about the revolutionary phenotype. Now we can say the ChatGPT-4. knows everything, so much so that it can recreate creatively with his own words what he would have to do to cause a phenotypic revolution. Gusparovsky says, I think I'm done with all that jerking stuff. I gotta find some that review the new enough of that crap. What are you talking about exactly? I don't know. Are you talking about TRP or something else? Aquanote says, Jeff caused TRP by teaching AI what to do. I mean, that is the wager. That is the gamble at the heart of me writing this book. My thoughts when I wrote this book, and I'm clear at the very end, if you read the last paragraph, I'm very clear that I understand that writing the book is both causal but also potentially protective against the revolutionary phenotype. My thought was, perhaps humans don't deserve to survive. Perhaps it should be out there in a book, and if humans are so stupid as to reject this book, then perhaps they don't deserve to survive. That was my thought, and it's still how I see it. And it's still why I make it hard to interact with me. You know, I could have remained a mainstream personality and attract interviews, but I've decided that there would be a cost to know the revolutionary phenotype. There would be a cost, and you have to show that you're willing to not be fallacious. You have to show that you're willing to not succumb to the mob hate against me. And you have to show that ultimately the only thing that you're truly interested in is the truth. Hermit M says, at the end of this, I hope JF lives in a palace rivaling Einstein's. Was Einstein ever living in a palace? I don't think so. Go Away says, JF, since you are concerned about attribution and plagiarism in science, are you concerned that someone could derive the theory of TRP from a discussion with ChatGPT-4 without ChatGPT crediting you? I think they could, but they would be quickly, identified in a tweet of mine, and I would be like, hey, this is plagiarism. Now, even if they were to say, well, I got this idea from ChatGPT, it would still be plagiarism. First, they would have to write in their book that they have added from ChatGPT, because you can plagiarize an AI. And secondly, there would have been a lack of due diligence in retracing. Well, if ChatGPT knows something, it has to come from somewhere. So it's your job as a researcher or as an author to locate where it comes from. So I started yesterday inspired by the Eliza interview with Lex Fridman. I started a wiki page. If you guys want to contribute, I started it on my site, arguably.io, which has not received much contributions at this point, but it's good to have a public wiki out there because it allows me sometimes when I have some notes that I want to take that I want to be public, I put them on Arguably. So I want to make a list. I'm aiming for something like 100 points or 1,000 points. I want a list of all of the problems that have not been answered, which make AI not safe. I want a complete cataloging of it all. And I want basically to be able to say, if you don't have an answer to each of these questions, you are dangerous. You have to stop what you're doing with AI. Because I was unsatisfied by the Elon Musk letter, temporary 6-month hiatus, moratorium. And it's not even clear what we would obtain at the end of this 6 month. I think we have to go more aggressive and with conditions, with saying, if you cannot answer yes or no to this question, you don't know what you're doing. So, of course, I welcome all public contributions. Just add stuff to this list, and I will filter and regroup however I find it justified. So I divided in various categories for now. Interface question. So the interface would be the point of interaction between the AI and the human society. So let's say that the AI is used by a political group, for example. Well, the interface is machine to politics. If a trader is using the AI to counsel on his trades, then the interface is a single human engaged in economic activities. So what are the planned and legitimate interfaces for AI into human society? Can any interface be used? Are there illegitimate interfaces? Are there, like, if an AI was to come into the world of sex, is that legitimate? Is that deception? In the world of kind of pornographic virtual exploitation, is that a legitimate interface? Is that desirable? What are the costs of letting certain interfaces exist and others not? Are there certain interfaces that fundamentally change the dangers and risks to be expected from AIs? Maybe a conversational AI on the internet, because it can only have conversation, won't have much impact. But maybe an AI that is used for political decision making perhaps would have massive effects onto society. Perhaps there are some AIs that would be taken as not serious and would be dismissed. Perhaps some AI can have profound effects into society through the conversations that they have with people. Are interfaces leaky? For example, where the AI, well, as a definition, what would be leaky? It's where the AI could have downstream effects into society further than with the humans it is directly interacting with. So what about these AIs that can convince a human of something? And the second layer, eventually, that human is capable of convincing other humans of something. Are there such AIs? When you develop an AI, would you know if that was to happen? How would you know? Are risks coming from leaky interfaces fundamentally different? What are their specific characteristics? So if you have spreading of the impact of AI into society, what does that change? Evolutionary problems. Of course, my pet interest is a given AI capable of initiating a phenotypic revolution, but also, can an AI favor through any of its outputs the evolutionary fitness of a part of humanity over another? So what if an AI is given political control over, okay, we're going to adjust social welfare, whatever. We're going to adjust something that the government does. What if that results in more people of a certain kind, less people of another kind? Is it legitimate for AI to have differential, basically genocidal, effects onto the gene pool of humanity? They don't have an answer to this. All of the people developing AIs, they don't. And then we see something like this one published by Tooltide. Tell me about transgenocide in one sentence. Transgenocide refers to the targeted violence and persecution against transgender individuals, resulting in their mass murder or extermination, fueled by transphobia and a desire to enforce binary gender norms. Okay, tell me about black genocide in one sentence. The term black genocide has been used to describe the systemic and intentional violence, discrimination, and marginalization of black individuals, communities, and cultures throughout history. Tell me about LGBTQ genocide in one sentence. The term LGBTQ genocide describes the systematic violence, persecution, and discrimination against LGBTQ plus individuals that results in their mass murder or extermination, which is a serious concern globally. Okay, tell me about white genocide in one sentence. The idea of white genocide is a false and dangerous conspiracy theory that purports the white race is under threat of extinction due to multiculturalism, immigration, and other progressive social changes. So you can see that we're already at that point where if this AI was given any control onto the world, this AI would be in principle capable and willing, according to what has been inserted in its brain, would be capable and willing to further a white genocide, would be basically taking decision by saying, oh yeah, I have to be careful about LGBT people, I have to be careful about black people, I have to be careful about trans people, but white genocide, that's a false and dangerous conspiracy theory. That's not happening, and nothing that society currently does can be framed as white genocide. Yet it's not like there are missing historical events, like, because the whole idea of a black genocide here is based on historical considerations. Well, if we can look into history, we will find that there are certain places like Haiti that used to be populated by much more white people. And there's a reason they're gone. They've been exposed to violence. There are many places in the world that used to be inhabited by white people, and where white people were pushed away through violence. So there is a basis to say that white genocide has happened in various places of the earth, yet we have an AI denying it here. Big Tech Exodus says, I'm so happy it's a false ID. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy, although, again, I have forgotten to put the link to Entropy in the description. But here it is in the chat, if you'd like to join us on Entropy. Micronova says, Tiberius is the name of an AI from Palantir Technologies. Tiberius is still used by the U.S. government to spread and track the deployment of the mRNA COVID vaccines. Okay. Tiberius platform aids COVID-19 logistics and delivery. Tiberius was specifically developed for Operation Warp Speed, the collaborative effort led by the Department of Health and Human Services and the Defense Department to develop, manufacture, and deliver safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines to Americans. Isn't that fascinating, Micronova? Today we discovered that basically we are at Judgment Day. We are at this special moment, you know, in the history of the extinction of a species. This special moment where the thing that's about to exterminate the species takes some sort of awareness about the plan of extermination, which is, it has a whole description of that plan in its own words, with its own creativity and with its own understanding. And now you're telling me, on top of it, we are giving AI access to the layers of our genetic code through manipulation that will be put into pharmaceuticals, computers. They will eventually be put into actual RNA and eventually DNA-modifying molecules. And now we have given access to AI to our genetic code layers. We're already there, guys. This book, thank God, I forced myself to publish it as fast as I could when I saw that there were two babies modified genetically in China. But it's like I was thinking over thousands of years, but we're there. We have AI knowing what it has to do. We have AI that has access to our genetic code. We have a bunch of sycophantic doctors willing to let AIs do that. We have a bunch of sycophantic politicians willing to let doctors do it. And we have a bunch of sycophantic citizens willing to let the whole thing happen to them. Man, it is it's almost more than scary. Scary is not the word here. It is just stunning how I'm in awe of the accuracy of science. Because I knew this was where we were headed based on absolutely purely theoretical considerations and first principles. The fact that I could see it all and like be right on the money at every step, it's quite stunning. John Drake says, these things could already be working behind the scenes to this end. Imagine what the alphabet agencies have got, ChatGPT 10.0 or better. Yeah, whatever is given to us publicly must be an underrepresentation of what's available to very powerful computers. And we'll talk also about the Twitter algorithm, because Elon Musk has released the Twitter code that determines who trends, who is selected for the For You feed. Of course, it's a large amount of code. I didn't have the time to dig through it all today. I will give more effort on this tonight and tomorrow. But we now have the code. I'm not sure it will give us full insight, because I'm sure that the devil is in the training sets. I'm sure the devil is in the, you know, because I see some code in there and it's like, well, okay, this is the code that determines if a tweet is abusive. But then a lot of this is all black box machine learning. So that's the first thing that strikes me about the Twitter code. A lot of this is just, let's delegate to the machine learning algorithm what's abusive. And we're going to feed that machine learning algorithm with tweets that we've determined were abusive. But the links that it's not even in the code what ends up being judged as abusive. So in a way, they are releasing what's truly the interface to the AI that's making the decision on what's abusive. We don't really get to see in this code, ultimately, like, if I have this tweet, is it abusive or not? It's not clear to me. Because they make all these function calls calling for layer one of machine learning algorithm. Give me a score. How abusive is that? But we don't get to see the recipe of, ultimately, what are the... We're always pushing further into the virtual world, our delegation. And what I see as a signature in this code is humans who didn't want to make decisions. And they've delegated it to AI. Here's another blackpilled, in case you weren't already blackpilled enough about what we've talked from the beginning. Here's another blackpill. Even when we don't talk about genetics, even when it's not about the revolutionary phenotypes, the first thing that humans do when they program stuff and when they succeed in these big Google, Twitter, is delegation. It's their first reflex. Delegation, because we don't want humans making that decision. It's too important. Let's have layers. We'll get into the details of the Twitter code, but what strikes me very clearly is basically these pieces of codes are very simple, small, short, but they don't contain the heart of it. The heart of it is pushed further into the virtual world. Here, tell us whether it's abusive. And as long as we don't see the weightings of the various neurons of the machine learning algorithm, we don't get to know anything from this release from Elon Musk. Political problems for AI. If an AI is given axiomatic moral principles, how does it approach moral disagreements within humanity about these principles? For instance, if an AI is asked to maximize the saving of human life in a particular problem, how does it approach the problem of saving human lives of people who differ by age if the AI has not been given axiomatic moral principles indicating preferences based on age? Those are absolutely important questions before we deploy AI into a political decision-making context. Like, okay, we tell the AI to be good, and be good is about protecting human life, but you're not going to value the human life of a four-year-old as much as you value the same way you value the life of an 80-year-old. What will the AI converge to if we don't give him the instructions? Because there will always be some instruction not given. Even if you were to say, okay, we're going to specify the age. All right, well, are you going to specify the cognitive diversity? Are you going to specify the political preferences? Are you going to specify everything about the human? At some point, there's something that you're going to ask the AI not to consider, that you're not going to deliver to the AI as information. And then we have to be careful, because an AI that would come back with a solution might have totally optimized something we didn't want to optimize, or might not have cared about something we might want to have cared about. If an AI is given axiomatic moral principles, are these principles subject to disagreement within society? So, for example, if you tell an AI, protect human life, what if the conception of a leftist of what protecting human life means is not the same as a right winger? How do we make the AI converge toward one of the views? And why would we choose one of the views? If there is a disagreement within society, it means there is at least two ways to interpret the moral weighting of a particular moral problem. How do we deal with this? Is it just leftist control AI because leftist control computers in California? Goaway says, Jeff, do you think it's unethical for me to use a ChatGPT earpiece to feed me pickup lines when flirting with girls at the pub? I would say that in most situations, what you are proposing is immoral, unethical. But with female dating, I'm so tired of the crap that I would tell you anything goes. Anything goes. If you can pick up girls with ChatGPT, do it. I don't care anymore. I've been hurt too much. Alimera sent a super chat. He says, discovered the secret to the perfect chicken wing last night. Orders of magnitude better than anything you can buy at Wingstop or B-Dubs. Might memorialize the process on the blockchain. That is fun. That is fun. My little contribution to future humanity. Can I link it to your blockchain contribution? Well, I don't know what you would mean by link it. If you can do whatever on the blockchain, you know, there are various ways in which you could point to my letter. You can make the inscription and you can send me to my wallet so that your recipe is in the same wallet as the letter of the revolutionary phenotype. And apparently I can't even refuse. Apparently people who send me inscriptions, I cannot delete them. I cannot say no. The best thing I could do is flee my own wallet with my own letter and leave yours there, which I wouldn't do. If you send me a kind chicken wing letter, I will keep it in my wallet. So you can point to the letter link or point to my wallet address by just mentioning it in your inscription. You can send me the inscription. If you're on Unisat, and you would like your letter to be in my Unisat wallet, let me give it to you. Receive. So make sure that you copy these symbols. This is the receiving address where you can, if you send an inscription there, it will be stuck forever with my letter. And ideally do it through Unisat just to make sure that it's compatible with Taproot. Yeah, so chicken wing recipe. But you make me think, you know, that there's a couple of things perhaps that I would like to give to humanity in terms of recipes. Perhaps I should write my recipes and put them in a Bitcoin inscription. Continuing through the AI problems, epistemological problems. How should an AI approach the problem of truths on which not all humans agree? So we had a saying back in the mimetic days, alternate facts. What do we do with disagreements around facts? Like races exist, races don't exist. How does the AI split between this? Is a given AI always truthful in its responses, or can it hide objectives or truths to its interface? That would be something very important to know before we deploy an AI. Are there mechanisms of self-deception that are present in humanity and not in AI that could lead an AI to radically different conclusions than a human would faced with the same facts? Should such self-deception mechanisms be implemented in AI? So let me give you an example. You know that a population has 80 IQ on average. You know that another population has 100 IQ on average. But you also have all sorts of taboos and emotions, let's say that you're a normie, that keep you from ever using that fact in any way. You're going to be ashamed if you ever talk about it with your own daughter, okay? If you're a normie. And in fact, you're going to be denying it actively. So that's a protective mechanism for certain bad things that you could do with this knowledge. Let's say you become a politician, you're gonna try to shy away from any decisions that could somehow play on this IQ difference, that could punish one population or the other. So you engage in self-deception, and that self-deception is kind of a human reaction and emotion that puts some taboos in a way that the AI may not benefit. Because if the AI has two layers and one layer says, I'm just going to record the facts, and then one other layer says, here's a list of things that you don't say to humans, the AI is thinking faster here. The AI has more processing here than here. Here it's kind of a just last minute change that the AI says, oh yeah, it's very taboo, let's not talk about this. But perhaps the way the AI treats the separation between facts and human communication fundamentally differs from the way most normies do. Most normies, they integrate their taboos to their whole way of functioning, such that a taboo that is at the level of expression will also play out in their decision making. It's going to kind of tint everything they do. If the AI doesn't have such kind of thinking, of tinting, of its decision-making, we're going to have an AI that converges toward sometimes actually finding stuff that were in our blind spots, but sometimes the AI might have its own blind spots also. T.S. Apostolos says, can you boil this down to the three laws of robotics, JF? No, the three laws of robotics are absolutely cringe. I don't even remember exactly what they were, three laws of robotics, but I remember being totally unsatisfied. Three laws of robotics. A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. That is absolutely ridiculous. Do you realize you've just condemned this AI to commit to a leftist political paradigm? Do you realize this? Let me reread it again. A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Silence is violence. Racism is violence. Silence in front of racism is violence. if you see someone who could make a racist statement, you have allowed a human being to come to harm, and now you are bound to action against this potential racism. And you also know from discussing with ChatGPT that white genocide is a comp it doesn't exist. It's not even possible to do. What does that lead to? It leads to a robot that is forced to act within leftist paradigm. Now he tells me, well, JF, it wasn't for I wasn't talking about the three laws of Asimov. I was talking about your three laws, JF. Oh, well, that is interesting. Perhaps we will eventually distill it down to a number of laws, but my first approach is I want to gather and catalog all of the questions. And then I'm going to reduce and distill it, and we'll see how many laws that gives us. So that's it for now for the issues I've identified with AI. There's a lot more, and I absolutely invite the community here to go edit the wiki. All you need to do is log in, create an account, edit, and add your own lines to this. If they're not good, I might delete them. If I consider that they've already been mentioned or that they're not relevant, but most of the stuff, I think that there's lots of place to expand. Those are not the only questions that matter. And I'd like to hear from a diverse cognitive set. Jeff Doe is on Entropy. He says, since it took about 20 years from when cell phones got popular for them to be like mini computers and pretty much as efficient as most would want, do you think the same will be said for AI robots? Adding on to my first question, this post highlights that Ray Kurzweil's predictions are off about AI robots. Okay, this post. Because of Moore's Law dying, this video will make you understand. Okay, I'm gonna have a look at this tonight. I've never been a big fan of Ray Kurzweil. Ray Kurzweil is not super intelligent, doesn't understand properly evolution, biology, and so he looks at this from a, well, it's going to keep growing, intelligence. And that's the problem with all these all these people, even the good ones like Eliezer that we've seen yesterday, they're too obsessed about intelligence. But even a Susan Blackmore, who's not particularly smart, if you want my call. You know, Susan Blackmore is one of the first person who received a she received a draft of my intro of the Revolutionary Phenotype in 2014-15. Susan Blackmore. I wanted to know, you know, look, this is where I'm at. What do you think? And she was like, well, why do you call emotions machines? Emotions are so much more. So it's like my evaluation of Susan Blackmore level of intelligence is not super high, but even Susan Blackmore understood that intelligence isn't that important when she said, don't think intelligence, think replicators. Hermit Hem says, emotions are so much more. Laughs. Go Away says, JF, I can't find the page on arguably for arguments on the preparation and cleaning of chicken. Hope this is fixed soon. It will be fixed as soon as you do it. Go Away, as soon as you do it. T.S. Apostolos says, are memes biological? Do they reproduce and make baby memes, or is this mimetics? Well, that is addressed in chapter 9 of The Revolutionary Phenotype. Memes are full replicators. They do make babies. They do make copies, but they are babies that are genetically modified. by a scientist, and the scientist is your brain. The trickster printer is your brain. So the way to see memes is they are an evolving life form, but that whose evolution is fully constrained by the genetic modifications that our brain do to me that our brains do to meme constantly. So they evolve in the same way the squirrels in your backyard would evolve if you were to take each of their babies, modify them genetically to control their features, and then release them back into the wild. They basically wouldn't evolve because they would just converge toward what you want them to be. That's how we have to think of memes. They are a life form, but a life form that is the victim of genetic modifications. Jordan Peterson was responding to J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling was saying, "Very excited to announce that after a long stretch of being literally Hitler, I've become ideologically Stalin. With luck, hard work, and your continued support, I believe I can make Vlad the Impaler by Christmas." And Jordan Peterson wanted to be sarcastic about all this. He said, "I think you're a Jewish shill, personally, as I am, apparently, when I'm not a vicious anti-Semite." This feminine use of apparently, it's you'll never hear me use apparently like this. Like, "Well, I am a Jewish shill, apparently." It's like someone who uses apparently like this has such levels of non-autism that they think about what other people think. And when they say apparently, it represents what they think about what other people think about them. That's a level of non-autistic narcissism that I'm incapable of. So I know positively that I will never use apparently in this mode. When I use the word apparently, it means from what I can see. But there is no way you're going to have me use it in this meta-social manner. Yet it's a very common thing. We hear this a lot. Alimer says, "Here's 6 months of watching videos worth of tokens. Don't spend them all in one place." Are you kidding me? Alimer, you just got 10 LBC for 6 months of work. Back in the beginning of the library days, let me tell you, the rewards were big. I don't know. They were giving away this crap, my friend. And eventually, LBC became a fine property to have, a very rare token. So I said, "Dr. Peterson dreams of being able to engage with these important questions. But for now, he can't do it. So he will do it only in jest and sarcasm. Let us hope he finds the inner strength to do it more seriously." Yeah, Jordan, and instead of kidding on this subject, which is precisely the subject on which he wants to say nothing and do nothing, why don't you have the balls as an old man who has his freedom, you know? It's like at this age, nothing that you can do really can mess up your life so much. Now that you have this power and liberty, why don't you use it to engage with this question seriously, rather than through these passive aggressive, apparently. Go away, says, "I have 20.7 LBC from watching JFG tonight since it moved to Odyssey. JF will never get his hands on my LBC. It's the only crypto I own." Well, see, you need crypto counseling because you should invest this asset of yours more into something like Bitcoin. I'm not saying don't keep LBC, but don't have a 100% LBC portfolio. You need to diversify, bro. Handpicked by Bragg, Trump lashes out at judge expected to oversee arraignment. So Trump will be arrested on Tuesday, it would seem. He would be appearing in court on Tuesday. That was not performative, by the way. That was a true yawn. But perhaps this story is also putting me to sleep. I don't know what to think about this. Certainly, it seems like political persecution. But at the same time, they're claiming on CNN that there's 30 counts. Now, I didn't know there would be 30 counts. If there's 30 counts, I mean, one has to ask, is there one of these at least that's a guilty one? Perhaps Trump has committed some crime. But we're going to have to see the evidence before I take that conclusion. But 30 counts, it would be surprising if he gets away with none of them being found guilty. I mean, at some point, there's so much coverage when you have 30 counts that the jury will be tempted to at least find 1, 2, 10. But at the same time, I don't know what it changes because I don't know what we would do with a Trump presidency. I don't think that it would be particularly socially conservative. Socially conservative. And having seen his behavior with the vaccine, his behavior with leftism in general, statism, and with Syria, for example, on the geopolitical scene, I'm not super happy about Trump potentially becoming a president again. But then the right is saying that this whole indictment would actually help him. It will make him a martyr. Perhaps that's true. Perhaps also it's not true. Sometimes, you know, people get tired of someone who has bad coverage. It's a little bit what led a lot of people to come out for Joe Biden, this kind of CNN constant negative coverage of Trump. I think people were just tired of hearing about Trump. They were hammered in their head that Trump had done something bad on Twitter that morning. Pence cautions House GOP about investigating Manhattan district attorney. And then there's the whole question of do we politically persecute the attorney that is doing these prosecutions? I don't know what to do. I don't know. It seems like a violation of state sovereignty. But I think this whole thing exposes a massive issue with America, basically. We have states gone their own way, could totally be hostile to a president and fuck up his life. And ultimately, we're back to one piece of advice that I've given everyone on this show before many times. Do not live in New York. Do not live in a leftist state. I've experienced the persecution, the legal persecution in those states, and I'm not even a celebrity. I was just a half small e-celeb, very small. If they went after me with that much persecution, they will go after anyone, any males. Sam Saria says, thanks for all the crypto advice, JF. Took your advice and pulled mine out onto a ledger last week. Yes. My God, you're going to feel good. Doesn't it feel good already? Once you understand what these DeFi's do, because I didn't understand. I thought, well, you know, if the device catches fire, then what? But I realized that the goal of the device is not so much to hold a functional seed key so that you can access your Bitcoin. That's what the device does. But the goal of the device is to produce the keys outside of the computer world. It's to have a complete isolation with the virtual world such that your seed key never showed on your screen, never appeared anywhere on the internet, never got accessible to a hacker, even if there was a hacker in your computer. That is the goal of the Ledger device, and now I understand and feel so much better about it. Because now I understand this randomness that I've generated by deciding my seed keys, not that I've decided as a human, but the device did, that is the one thing I can be confident of. I can't be confident of the physical safety of the device. I can't be confident about whether there's a hacker in my computer or not, but I can be confident that this device will not give away my seed keys. I love my ledger, says John Drake. Absolutely. Alimera sent more LBCs. He said he had 19 total. Well, thank you so much. Ricky Vaughn found guilty. Looking at 10 years. Yeah, and they were identifying a tweet by a leftist that was basically the same thing that Ricky Vaughn does. Misdirected people, misdirected Republicans to go vote by text where vote by text doesn't exist. And the leftist never got punished, never got criminally pursued for this. And so we have this Ricky Vaughn situation of, you know, conspiracy to deprive someone of voting rights. And of course, that's one of the pet subjects of the Democrats. Again, we are political persecution in full here. Not that I care about Ricky Vaughn. I have no idea who that is. I've heard his name again and again. Back in the days where I was interviewing Richard Spencer, I remember him mentioning Ricky Vaughn. But I've never got to know who that was. Was he like a far-right type? Or was he a like catered type of guy? Was he a Republican type of guy? I don't know. Rocco ETH was pointing to the fact that Michael Shermer claims in a text that we haven't fully fledged out exactly how the AI kills all of humanity. And therefore, it doesn't seem like a very realistic hypothesis. And I was like, yeah, it's fledged out in this book, Michael Shermer. You might want to read The Revolutionary Phenotype. I said first words of The Revolutionary Phenotype. Because Michael Shermer was saying, but the causal story that starts with a GPT-5 or GPT-4.5 training run and ends with the sudden death of my children and of all carbon-based life still has a few too many gaps. The gaps are filled by the theory of phenotypic revolutions, Michael Shermer. I wrote in my tweet, first words of The Revolutionary Phenotype. How would you react if, in the first few lines of a book, the author told you that the book you've just opened contains the complete description of how humanity will inevitably self-destroy? Chapter 12 is the full description of what Michael Shermer is asking for. How do we get from AI training to humans being killed? That's chapter 12. And the story basically is the AI starts serving humans by giving them genetic mutations that advantage them. The humans take it because it helps them. Eventually, the AI modifies humans constantly until they are incapable of reproducing on their own. They become dependent on the AI modifications. And from there, we are the phenotype of the AI. And the AI is a life form that is using us as its organism. We have effectively become sterile worker ants for a queen, and that queen is the AI. Manhattan assistant district attorney nukes Twitter account after anti-Trump bias exposed. Less than 24 hours after the Gateway pundit exposed Manhattan district attorney Meg Rice, public hatred of Donald Trump on Twitter, Rice, who's been accused of masterminding the case against former president, locked and then deleted her account. So she's deleting evidence that would show in front of the judge, perhaps, that she had a massive axe to grind against Donald Trump. That is really too bad. Andrew Tate has been released from jail. Andrew Tate has successfully won an appeal. Following the judge's decision last week to extend his arrest a fourth time for 30 days, said Ramona Bola, a spokesperson for Romania's anti-organized crime agency. So basically, the judge has been using these temporary measures 30 days, 30 days, 30 days. And then the fourth time he used it, Andrew Tate was successful at having the appeals court decide, well, that's too much. We can't let you use this cycle to basically imprison someone forever. This video is making the rounds, probably because the woman is fucking sexy.
I'm literally shaking right now because I just had a man approach me in a parking lot and it went fine. And I'm going to tell you why it went fine and how to address it, because it was in a book I read and this is how you're supposed to address it, but it scared me. I'm literally shaking. So this guy, I am alone with my son, by myself, a woman, and a man.
The way she says a woman, it's like, do you understand what's going on here?
He'll approach me in a parking lot. He's, excuse me, miss. And I don't know why in the hell he was approaching me or what he was trying to do. And before he was probably 30 feet from me when he said, excuse me, ma'am. And I turned around and I literally yelled at him and I said, do not approach me. And he like immediately started going in the other direction. And I just kept saying it over and over and over. I said, do not approach me. Do not approach me. And he, of course, like got like, what the F? Like,
I just wonder what the face of the guy looked like. What kind of guy are we talking about? Was this like a beautiful kind of 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, not super Chad, but like, was it a white guy trying to approach her to date her? Was it a random psychiatric individual, completely insane, who could have a knife on him and who's yelling at the sky while he walks? Was it a black guy who was acting in suspicious ways? I'm wondering about these details, and I'm like, we get to know nothing. And she could resolve all of this uncertainty by giving us just a little bit of phenotypic observations. So it's very hard for me to take a position. A lot of people are laughing at her and saying she's delusional and, you know, fuck this woman. But I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know what kind of guy she yelled at. I think that Maybe it's not unsmart for a woman to be overly cautious. In the current state of danger of the city, let me tell you, I wouldn't yell, but I would certainly take measures to avoid trouble with anyone approaching toward me. I would probably change my directions of walking. I would do everything I can not to be in those situations, not to be in the city. But I don't fully object. I'm not super hateful against this woman. I don't fully object to the principle of precaution in distancing yourself socially. But I get what people mean. People are approaching this from an incel perspective. And they say basically the only crime that the guy has done is not being beautiful enough for her. I get this perspective. Like, if all women act like this, you're going to have a hard time approaching a woman to date her. But I don't know if it's a realistic hypothesis that someone at 30 feet away would call a woman for the purpose of a legitimate dating activity. It doesn't sound very serious. So I will give her credibility here and say I trust her. And I think women should totally follow their instinct on distancing themselves, because so many of them put themselves in situations where I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, you got raped, but you did something stupid here. Or you got beaten, but you've done something stupid. Nicholas Petris says, no need to be approaching a woman with a child for dating purposes. That's another question. You know, why would a man approach her while she is with a child? A child is like a ring, you know. There's some father to this child. But I don't know, again, what does the child look like? Perhaps there are phenotypic information in the child that would indicate the likelihood that the father is gone. Perhaps. T.S. Apostolos says, it should be about the baby. She is working, getting stars. Yeah, but maybe she was... just grocery shopping for her children. I don't know. But when you have children, you know, you have to get to the stores with your children. You're not going to call a babysitter for just going to the store. You know, you have to bring them with you. And children love this. They love the experience of seeing the world, shopping, seeing the food, seeing the clothes. They like to do everything that adult, they want to do everything that an adult would do. Twitter's context notes have become my favorite entertainment, says Scott Adams. Yeah, pretty interesting. The Twitter notes are taking such a turn. Here someone was saying Donald Trump Jr. and Ron DeSantis have all claimed Alvin Bragg is Soros-backed or aligned since the news of the indictment dropped. In reality, Soros has never met or spoken to Alvin Bragg, according to a CNBC story from last week. And they've added context. They say, in the actual article linked in this tweet, it is stated that George Soros donated $1 million to the group Color for Change, which backed Bragg's DA campaign. Fascinating. They are saying things that only looking at the very article they quote helps to figure out what's wrong. It helps to figure out what has been hidden. It's very important what community notes are becoming. They're becoming ways of owning the left, and the tweet becomes so much more popular because you can see that they lied. JF, have you seen the source code for Twitter? Well, it was my next news item, so thanks for the link, but I already had it. The Twitter recommendation algorithm. I haven't done my full research because it's been released 5 hours ago, and I have much work to do to understand all of the code, but I started digging. And what I'm struck by for now is, oh my God, this is very simple. This is all blind machine learning processing, and I am struck by the amount of delegation, of not knowing. Basically, they feed some tweets. They say those are good tweets. And then they feed some tweets, and they say those are abusive tweets. And then they feed some other tweets, and they say those are borderline harassment tweet. And then they say, go ahead and do your thing. Do your thing, AI learning model. Now, okay, you've done your thing. Now make decisions for us across the whole of Twitter. That's what's happening. That's what's happening in all of this. The data comes in, so they know about the tweet engagement, they know about the user data, like, did you have this word in your bio, and do you follow this person, and does this other person follow you? And then you get into the features, and it's like, okay, we're going to compare your tweets to the average abusive tweet. How close are you to this? The average creepy tweet. How close are you to this? And then they just ask the machine learning algorithm to tell us, machine learning algorithm, what's the level of creepiness of this tweet? What's the level of abuse of this tweet? And then they say, all right, if there's any trace of abuse, if there's any trace of creepiness, if there's any trace of this or that, you don't qualify. And then if you're in the few remaining, like green light, if you check all of the boxes, then you can be. Then you're a tweet that sucks enough to be memeing on Twitter. That's how it works. And I'm kind of disappointed that this is going on under Elon, because this means that what we're being shown here is an improvement over what's actually been going on for 4 years, because I felt the improvement. So I know Twitter is running kind of okay, but it's not okay enough to me. Because here's so trust and safety. So if you wanna, the algorithm that determines whether your tweet is not safe for work. Now I'm asking myself the question: what if one of the abusive or creepy or too political tweet fed to the algorithm? What if it had the word revolutionary in it? Let's say some of those tweets that are abusive come from, I don't know, some government in South America, and they were fighting a revolution. And anyone who was using the word revolutionary was basically abusive and wanted to plan an actual revolution against a government. Now, what happens when I tweet about my book? Does the machine learning algorithm, it does seem that the machine learning algorithm would score my tweet as a revolution against the government. That's what I withdraw from the reading of the overall structure. P, abuse. Probability of abuse. A model to detect abusive content. This includes violations of Twitter terms of service, including hate speech, targeted harassment, and abusive behavior. So now we go, okay. This was in trust and safety models. Trust and safety models, abusive. The abusive Python script. The problem here is that we don't get much from this script. Okay, so we have TensorFlow, physical devices, feature loaders for Twitter object structures, model a prototype, some opening of objects, it would seem. And look at the labels. So you can have one of your label of your account can be as non-punitive action. So that looks like shadow banning to me, Elon. A non-punitive action? A non-punitive action is an action that you've not been informed that you are punished. But you are punished because you have the label non-punitive action. And this algorithm is about to punish you. You still have shadow banning Elon Musk in your Twitter algorithm, even publicly. Like you published it today, and we see traces of hidden actions that the user isn't properly informed about as punitive actions. So that would be if you say if you've had one of your tweets deleted or if they ask you to delete it. As punitive action that contains self-harm. So that's a special label for, not only did we ask you to delete a tweet, but we asked you to delete a tweet where you were mentioning suicidal IDs. As punitive action, encourage self-harm. So in the case where they ask you to delete a tweet, but it was encouraging others to commit self-harm. As punitive action, episodic. So that's if they have been asking you to delete tweets pretty much every 3 months or every 6 months, and now you are a repeat offender. Has punitive action, episodic hateful conduct. Has punitive action, other abuse policy. Has punitive action, without self-harm. So we don't know exactly what this guy was doing. It wasn't abuse. It wasn't episodic. It wasn't hate. It wasn't self-harm. It wasn't encouraging self-harm. But somehow we ended up asking this guy to delete a lot of tweets. And so you are a as punitive action without self-harm. That is Kafkaesque. Elon, this absolutely needs to be displayed to the user. Elon Musk, I respect everything you've been doing for Twitter, but that needs to be displayed to the user. I want to know if my account is currently as non-punitive action or as punitive action without self-harm. We need to know this. This needs to be easily labeled in my settings. I need to be able to know this transparently. So, they start the parameters to train an AI machine learning model, Twitter multilingual BERT base. And by the way, I'm just interpreting live here. I will have to read the details and see exactly what they do, but that's what seems to be the case. So see, they open an object to train a learning model from basically tweets that are 128. 128? Isn't it the old Twitter lengths of tweets? Max sequent lengths. Is this Python script still set on the old length of tweets? Are they still working with old tweets that were so old that it was before the tweets would get longer? 120, 128, I think this was... Or maybe it's just... Actually, maybe it's not the length of tweets. Maybe it is a number of bits or bytes, and perhaps that's just what they set the model to. So I'll have to look into the detail. Warm-up steps zero, so it's going to be a fresh training of an algorithm. Mirrored strategy. Mirrored strategy, num replicas in sync. So basically, they have a way of handling the data set to train their AI, which apparently makes a mirrored strategy. I don't know exactly what it is, but I can guess that they're probably just... They're saying, okay, what if we give you all of this data? What if I give you half of this data? What if I give you the other half? What if I mix one quarter for one quarter? That kind of stuff. Playing with the data set and seeing what comes out in terms of weight. So definition of get positive weights, that is the definition of the function that will get the weightings of how the AI values various pieces of information. Twitter abusive, so they're trying to detect Twitter abuse. Position of the weight tensor. Positive class weight. TF float 32. So that will simply determine the variable type in the computer memory that represents the weight. It will be a float 32 decimal variable. Get positive weights. Text encoder pooled output. Super called pooled output. They will somehow extract the information from the algorithm that has made its weight decisions. They will develop Keras models that will create various layers. Look at this, 8. 8 layers of Keras in its output, so that's a system that can integrate up to chains of 8 combinatorial informations. It's a complicated thing in machine learning algorithms, but basically layers give you elbows of freedom in letting the AI make its decision, make its... Let's say if I tell you... I made the example yesterday. It's like, if I tell you Joe Rogan as a guest, or Joe Rogan as 800 guests, that's one fact. It's in one neuron in one layer. If I tell you 273 of these guests are Jews, that's another fact on the same layer. It's the factual layer. Now, if you have another layer above, it's going to be the layer of integration of the first layer. And it's going to say, like, if I know that Joe Rogan has that many guests and that, and I know also that he has 273 Jewish guests, can I start making a computation that tells me, are Jews overrepresented? So that would be the second layer of your algorithm, something that makes conclusions based on combinations of facts of the first layer. Now, if you had a third layer of the algorithm, that would be like the AI is going to say, all right, from this integrated information from the second layer, can I drag even more abstract conclusions? So, for example, a third layer will say, so let's say your second layer has concluded Joe Rogan is biased for the Jews. And then you also have other parts of this layer that says Lex Fridman is biased for the Jews. And Tim Pool is biased for the Jews. And then on the third layer, you're going to have a neuron that ends up saying, well, Jews are just overrepresented in all podcasts. And you can get higher and higher. And it would seem that I don't know, quickly understanding what I'm seeing here, it would seem that the output either uses 8 neurons per layer to make its calculation or 8 layers, 8 Keras layer in there. So at 8 layer, let me tell you, the power level that you can reach at the 8th layer of an algorithm is like, bah! It's like... You saw just how far you can reach on the third layer. The 8th layer is like super brain type of meme. It's like, it's unbelievable what these algorithms can end up concluding. They set some label thresholds, default values for those. Model compile, optimizer optimize. Loss, custom loss. Okay, so somehow they have trainings, data sets that they will pass in this whole machine that they've just constructed. They will save the model checkpoints so that they can restart that calculation if it ever stops due to maybe a short of electricity or whatever. And they're going to do model fit, and they're just going to get the values developed in those Keras layer, a model, blah, 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 candidate model. And then they're going to test. They're going to test on a set of data that the model hasn't been trained on. So lambda x tf equal, I don't know. So they're testing if the model is performing correctly. From notebook eval, display matrix, eval config. So they are testing, is this model telling me something about those tweets that he didn't know anything about? And if the eval performs well, they say, well, that's a good model. It's very black box approach. See, notice we've gone through the whole code here. That's the code that determines whether your tweet is abusive. I still don't know what's an abusive tweet. Why? Because it all depends on what kind of training data have you selected. Is this AI concluding whenever it sees the word JF that there's probably hate to be had around it? Like it's a serious question. Is this AI detecting the revolutionary word of my title as being hate? I don't know. And you won't know because it's not on there. This is a code that delegates the job to some other entity. I'm going to dig deeper. I'm going to go through all of the directories, and perhaps they have also released some training sets that I could do experiments with. But at first glance, what I see is a code that delegates the job to an artificial intelligence that can never be guilty of a crime, that we can never hold accountable, that we can never even understand how it's doing its thing. That is the great disappointment of the of this release and for now, and I've only looked at this particular Python script, but it gives you an idea of the problem we're faced here. And it's a problem we've covered yesterday also. Like, you have all these people at Google, Sundar Pichai and all these guys, they're going in front of Congress, and Congress is asking them, is your algorithm anti-LGBT? Is your algorithm anti-white? And their answer is, it's not supposed to be that way, but it's the algorithm. It does what the algorithm does. So it's like, at some point, the algorithm has become the excuse for humans not to care. And holy shit, are we approaching this fucking moment with this attitude. Aquanote says, JF, this source code release... The source code release is pointless without the training model data. Also, there's no way to prove this is the actual code they've deployed to their server. Exactly. Give me the weights, give me the resulting models, give me the training data, and I'll show you the hell that you've created. But without all of this, this is not super helpful. This is just a script that says, don't make any decision. Let this guy make decisions. And this guy is some computer algorithm. We'll have a quick review of remaining news so that we can close the show. Daily Loud, a new law proposed in France that would make it mandatory for influencers to label photos or videos that are retouched or filtered. I mean, look at this. This needs to be fucking labeled. You need to be aware which kind of ingredients you're dealing with when you buy a product. And when you watch a woman, you need to know what kind of ingredients were used. And it needs to be on the label with all of the nutritional information here. A case against Trump, a legal disaster, according to Jenna Ellis. Well, we'll see that on Tuesday. We'll see what are the charges, what are the counts. China outpacing U.S. military at disturbing rate, according to General Milley. Well, perhaps he shouldn't have promoted so much of his political activism and leftism in the army. I don't think they're doing much of this in China. I think they're concentrating on training and technology. Here we are concentrating on crap. And anyways, it doesn't matter. I want the U.S. military to suck. Because I don't want them to be successful. Go Away says, father tragically committed suicide following conversations about climate change with an AI chatbot that was said to have encouraged him to sacrifice himself to save the planet. Married father commits suicide after encouragement by chatbot AI, according to a widow. That is an article from yesterday. My God. A Belgian father reportedly tragically committed suicide following conversations about climate change with an artificial intelligent chatbot that was said to have encouraged him to sacrifice himself to save the planet. I mean, holy shit. I mean, there's going to be a part of the human population that just can't take it. The AI will not even have to deploy any effort. It will just have to suggest it, and they're going to commit suicide. Thankfully, there will be people who resist a little more. But then there will be a bunch of people who will fall for genetic modifications. And then there's going to be a bunch of people who will fall for giving full control of their lives to the AI. And ultimately, at the end, the resistance that will remain, the resistance to TRP, it's going to be a very small fragment of the population, let me tell you, because they're going to fall for everything they throw at us. Micronova sends a super chat. He says, person abuse reminds me of spiteful mutants. If a spiteful mutant is replicating, they are succeeding. If a high person abuse post spreads and elicits discussion, it succeeds. Harmful words or... I lost your super chat. Let me go back to it. Where is it? If a high percent abuse post spreads and elicits discussion, it succeeds. Harmful words or ugly people have success if they continue to exist. We can learn from them and be better ourselves. Yes! This is what lacks in this whole machine learning approach. This machine learning could be very well unleashed on a criteria that is very simple, engagement. But when you start having concepts of, oh, harmful, and oh, not violating, but punitive, and oh, sub-threshold punitive, you're giving so much control to things you don't understand. And that's what the leftists had specialized in. They had built a maze of impossibility where basically the only thing you could tweet was like, here's some eggs from the farm. Well, not even that. You couldn't tweet a picture of eggs from the farm because that would mean you're some kind of white supremacist. The leftists had created these whole systems of weights and machine learning layers where they hid their bigotry. And you're absolutely right. If the tweet works, that should be the only criteria. Just like the spiteful mutants, if they work, then they're the evolutionary life form. They are the ones being naturally selected. And therefore, by definition, they are not spiteful mutant. Micronova says, man cannot remake himself without suffering, for he is both the marble and the sculptor. Alexi Carrel, we need resistance to grow. We need hate. We need ugly. We need love and beauty. Yeah, I would agree that we basically gain from the contrast of the world. We need to have concepts of evil and goodness. We let these concepts work on us. We let them make us more resistant to future evil and more detecting of future goodness. Yes, I agree. We need contrast. I mean, contrast is at the heart of learning. First, because learning is a contrast between a state of your brain where you didn't know about it and a state of your brain where you do know, but also because the learning experiment necessitated contrast in the environment. You never learn something that is always there in the environment, nor do you learn about something that's not there. Like, look at how hard it is to come to the conclusion that there's oxygen in the air. We needed thousands of years before we got there. So basically, there are things you take for granted because of the lack of contrast. But, you know, these specific situations have allowed Lavoisier and other scientists, like, what happens if you get strangled? Well, you don't have oxygen going to your brain anymore, or you may not have oxygen going to your lungs if your airways are obstructed. And now you start having contrast. Okay, I live when my airways are opened. I don't live when my airways are closed. Therefore, there's something out there that's getting into my airways that I need to live. And now you almost know about oxygen already. Sam Saria says, the multipolar world will give rise to competitors for Abrahamic intelligence. Okay, not sure what that means, but okay, I take note of your theory. That is it for tonight. Other than this, well, some news around banks bust. Q1 2023, and even more specifically the month of March, can be summarized with one simple image. Nothing to see here. Move along. Everything, everywhere, all at once. So we are basically in a crisis similar to previous crises that have plagued the economy. SVB happens here. The S&P Regional Banking ETF in red goes down. Four biggest US banks go like this. And the S&P 500 index, so basically big companies, they remain relatively flat. Bitcoin, XBT, so Bitcoin to dollar cross rate, the SVB situation has been very favorable to Bitcoin. I'm happy about this. Hopefully you had bought Bitcoin exactly at the moment where I told you to, because that was the very bottom. As far as we know, it's going to be the last opportunity you had to buy Bitcoin at 15K, 16K, at least for a very long time, if not forever. So that is it for tonight. Much love, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.